In the race to a $1 trillion valuation, Apple is getting some real competition. On Wednesday, Amazon hitting the $900 billion mark for the first time after announcing it sold more than 100 million products during its annual shopping event, Prime Day, narrowing its valuation gap with Apple, the world's most valuable publicly traded company.
Gold coins have taken a huge hit this year, and investors continue to put their cash into other higher-yielding options. For the first 6 months of the year, sales of American Eagle gold coins by the U.S. Mint were their lowest since 2007. Dealers say the flood of supply on the secondhand market is also making for stiff competition for those brand new 2018 coins. Meanwhile, premiums on gold coins are pretty low. The premium is the add-on cost dealers charge customers on top of the market price for gold.
Goldman Sachs, the second biggest investment bank in the world, on Tuesday named David Solomon as its next chief executive. Solomon will replace longtime chief Lloyd Blankfein, who had to pick up the pieces after the financial crisis. Blankfein reportedly will get as much as $85 million in compensation when he leaves. Solomon takes over as CEO on October 1st.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It is July 23rd, and we're happy you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell. And another business day and business week getting underway. Lots to do on the program today. Our first segment's going to be all about binge drinking. A new study from doctors on how to identify good ways to reduce binge drinking, especially among college students. And we're going to have the results of those that survey, that research coming up a little bit later in the program. We're going to be talking about plastic spoons and cups and forks and straws. Starbucks and McDonald's, don't know if you know this or not, are working together to try to get rid of plastic in our waste landfills and in our oceans. And D.L. Buss will be in our second segment this morning to talk about that and what McDonald's and Starbucks are doing jointly together. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward a flat open on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures were off about 9 points. NASDAQ futures were off about 30. And S&P futures are down about 2 points. Around the globe this morning, markets in Europe are generally lower, with the FTSE down almost 0.5%, the DAX down about 0.25%, and in France, the markets are lower by about 0.5%. In Asia, markets are generally mixed, with the markets in Tokyo a little bit lower, almost by about 0.1% and 0.33%, down about 300 points. The Hang Seng and the Shanghai are higher. Oil is trading this morning at $68.56 a barrel. A couple of stories we're watching for you this morning. Mondelez Global says it is voluntarily recalling some of its Ritz cracker products over the potential risk of salmonella. The company says it's recalling about 16 varieties of Ritz cracker sandwiches and Ritz Bits products in the U.S. The products may contain whey powder, which the supplier says may have the potential presence of salmonella. Mondelez says no illness have been reported yet. Symptoms include of salmonella, fever, nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea. This morning, there's news about Brexit. Britain's new Brexit chief has suggested that Britain might not pay its nearly $51 billion divorce bill if no trade agreement with the European Union is reached. The Brexit secretary says that there must be conditionality between Britain making the exit payment and its ability to create a new relationship with the EU. He says there have been talks that have not been fruitful on this matter. He replaced David Davis, who you may remember resigned 2 weeks ago to protest Prime Minister Theresa May's soft Brexit plan. There's also some rumbling in the UK today about possibly a second referendum on Brexit. And shares in Fiat Chrysler have dropped nearly 4% in the first trading since news that the Italian-American automaker's longtime CEO, Sergio Marchionne, has been replaced unexpectedly due to complications from surgery. The shares in the company fell about 1%, more than 1%, now pushing up to 2%. The losses signify some concern about the new leadership of that company. Front and center this morning, let's talk a little bit about binge drinking, a new model perhaps for identifying how to reduce binge drinking in college students. Dr. Manoj Sharma is with us today, professor of behavioral health at Amy Jackson State University and lead author of this study. Doctor, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Good morning, Steve. How are you doing?
Doing well, thank you. And yourself?
I'm fine, thank you.
Great. It's been a while since we've had a topic about binge drinking in the news. I don't know if it's because people are not talking about it as much anymore, but it's still a problem, isn't it?
Yes, it is a very significant problem, especially in college students. About 40% of college students report that they engage in it on a regular basis.
What constitutes binge drinking? What gets you to that classification?
Binge drinking is basically having five drinks over a period of 2 hours or in one sitting for men and four drinks for women. That raises the blood alcohol level to 0.08% per 100 gram of blood. So that is the definition of binge drinking.
The health impacts of this are probably pretty significant, aren't they?
Yes, the health impacts are pretty significant, especially for college students. Studies have shown that there is poor academic performance. Sometimes they end up with depression, suicide attempts, you know, unsafe sex, damage to other people's property, altercation with law enforcement, driving under the influence. All these are the kind of health consequences of binge drinking. And of course, alcohol in the long run is also pretty harmful.
Over the years, there have been any number of attempts to try to counter this, lots of different programs, awareness projects, that sort of thing. Have any of them been successful? And what has it led to with the study that you've authored?
Most of the attempts for curtailing binge drinking have only short-term effects, you know. The model that we have proposed is called the multi-theory model of health behavior change. Now, according to this model, the health behavior can be divided into initiation and sustenance. Any health behavior, there are some factors that are responsible for initiating or starting the behavior change, and there are some factors that are responsible for sustaining the behavior change. So for initiating the behavior change, there are three constructs or factors that this model proposes. The first one is that the person should be convinced of the advantages over disadvantages, meaning that the person should think that the behavior change is going to be beneficial for this person, and this can be done through a participatory dialogue. The second construct is that the person should have behavioral confidence. So in the case of binge drinking, the person should be confident that I can engage in responsible drinking or I can abstain from alcohol. So that behavioral confidence comes from internal sources as well as external sources. Previous research has shown that self-efficacy is a factor which alludes to more internal factors, but there are also external sources of support. In some cultures, particularly, for example, the person may believe in God as being the support for making the behavior change, or some deity may be there. So that those are the sources of behavioral confidence, and our model proposes that this behavioral confidence is futuristic in its orientation. So a person may not be having the confidence today, but he or she can say, well, from tomorrow or from next week, I can start this process. But then the third construct is changes in physical environment, which means that the person should remove alcohol from his or her environment, like, for example, not living at the fraternity or sorority, those kind of things for college students to avoid binge drinking. So these are the three constructs that are responsible for initiation of the behavior change. Then for sustenance of behavior change. We have the constructs of emotional transformation. The person should be able to transform his or her emotions into behavior change. For example, the person is getting angry or is getting frustrated. Instead of getting in that emotion, he can set a goal that I will be responsible in my drinking or I will abstain from alcohol. The next construct is practice for change. According to this construct, the person should constantly reflect on the behavior change. There should be active reflection, reflective action. So essentially, the person should think about setting up goals, keeping a record in a diary or use an app anytime there is a deviation from the plan, that plan should be rectified. So those kind of things. And then finally is the changes in social environment or the social support from friends and family that a person can generate, you know, to support the behavior change.
Dr. Sharma, hang on with us. We're going to continue our conversation. Lots more questions about some of the details of this and maybe even some of the demographics. But first, we need to take a quick break here in the opening bell and be back with Dr. Manoj Sharma, professor of behavioral health at Jackson State University, lead author of this study on a model for reducing binge drinking in college students.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to The Opening Bell. We're on with Dr. Manoj Sharma, professor of behavioral health at Jackson State University and lead author of this new study on binge drinking, a new model for reducing binge drinking in college students. Researchers, as you heard in our first segment, Dr. Sharma explaining, getting college students to drink responsibly, convincing them that it will quickly improve their health, relationship, and grades. Dr. Sharma, you studied about 300 college students over the course of a month or so, or a month or more. What were the challenges to putting this model in action? So the plus and minuses of your work here.
We only studied at one southern university. Our sample had only one university. So, you know, in future we will be expanding it to more universities and we will be designing an intervention. This was a cross-sectional survey. So in future, we will be having an intervention to modify these binge drinking behavior to responsible drinking behavior that will provide more credence to our model. And one of the limitations of our study was that we only had self-reports. So self-reports, you know, are amenable to various kinds of biases. So that was the biggest challenge for us.
As you were in our first segment explaining how part of this is removing a student from their atmosphere, from the atmosphere that causes this, that seems easier said than done, especially when you're in a college atmosphere and it's going on all around you. What were the challenges specific to that?
Yes, that is a real challenge because many students are not willing to make efforts to changing their environment, you know. And so in this, the parents can play a role, especially for students who are younger than 21 years of age, because it is not legal to drink in our country before the age of 21. So parents can help in the process. The resident advisors can help in the process. Faculty members can help in the process. The physicians on campus can help in the process. So a number of people, it would have to be a team effort from several people to help the students change their environment. And then ultimately the willingness has to come from the student himself or herself, you know, to make that change.
What did you find in terms of demographics, in terms of who over versus who was more likely to do this?
Yeah, compared to men, women were more willing to initiate and sustain responsible drinking. And compared to whites, the non-white races were more willing to initiate and sustain responsible drinking. So it was very challenging for designing interventions for white men. You know, they are the most vulnerable group and the most difficult to change.
As you move forward here, I know you want to do more study. What is that study, do you think, going to look like? What would you like to know the answers to that you haven't found the answers to yet?
Yeah, we will be designing an intervention in which we will be changing the binge drinking behavior to responsible drinking behavior, and we will be doing it through physicians. You know, we will be designing some concerted messages based on the multi-theory model that I just explained to you. You know, we will be having a brief 5 to 7 minute script for physicians when they will first of all ask the person whether they indulge in binge drinking or not, and if they say that they did it in the past 30 days or something like that, you know, then this script type of intervention will be implemented, and then that will motivate the students to change their behavior, and then we will track it over a period of time to see whether the behavior has changed, has been sustained or not.
Dr. Sharma, I know this study focused on college students, but is there any way that this sort of model, these models, will be helpful in the public at large? I mentioned earlier the costs of binge drinking generally in our society. I think 2010, the CDC said the cost was nearly a quarter of $1 trillion, $249 billion, a lot of that in lost productivity. Can any of the things that we've been talking about here be transferred to the public at large?
Absolutely. This model is a generic model. It's not only for college students, but for all populations, not only for binge drinking behavior. We have done studies with fruit and vegetable consumption behavior. We've done studies with small portion size behavior. We've done studies with physical activity promotion behavior. We've done studies with promoting water instead of sweetened beverages. One of my students is just completing her dissertation on physical activity promotion behavior, you know, for African-American women, and that is also, we found very encouraging results with this model. She designed an intervention and we found very encouraging results. So this model is applicable across different target populations, across different behaviors, and we envisage doing more studies and bringing this model in the mainstream.
Well, Dr. Sharma, we appreciate you being with us this morning and sharing the results of the study, and we wish you all the best in your future research on this.
Thank you very much, Steve. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and I wish your station all the good luck.
All right. Thank you very much, Dr. Manoj Sharma, professor of behavioral health at Jackson State University, lead author of this study that appears in the Journal of the American Osteopathic Association. We'll link out to it with the podcast of The Opening Bell a little bit later this morning at WGNradio.com.
Hi, this is Catherine Davis with today's NO Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoNO.com. Chicago-based Valor Equity Partners, which has invested in tech companies ranging from Elon Musk's SpaceX to Chicago AI startup Catalytic, announced that it has raised $1 billion for its Fund 4. The fund will target investments ranging from $25 million to $75 million. Chicago online exam startup Opternative announced its first international partnership as it brings technology to Mexican eyewear retailer Ben & Frank. The partnership will allow Ben & Frank's Mexico customers to take Opternative's online vision test to refill glasses and contact prescriptions. And Marsh ClearSight, a Chicago risk management software company, has been acquired for an undisclosed amount by Atlanta competitor RiskConnect. Founded more than 50 years ago, Marsh ClearSight helps organizations simplify the job of managing their risk, safety, and claims. That's today's NO Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoNO.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Monday edition of The Opening Bell. Starbucks and McDonald's have joined forces to lead the search for an alternative to the plastic cup. We've already been hearing a lot of talk about replacing plastic straws, but the plastic cup is now in their sights. Let's bring in Dale Buss, who's written about this at brandchannel.com. Dale, good morning. Welcome back to the Opening Bell.
You bet, Steve. Thanks. Good morning.
Good morning. These are a couple of big brands here that seem to be taking on what feels like an impossible task, and that is to get rid of more plastic in our landfills and oceans. Tell us what they're doing.
Well, it's a big thing when you get these two huge brands who compete so ferociously in the coffee space, obviously in restaurants, but also even in grocery aisles. I mean, McCafe by McDonald's and, of course, Starbucks packaged products, which are now owned by Nestle, you know, compete furiously for customers. So to bring them together, something has to be a big deal. And in fact, this whole problem of ocean waste is, and that's at the root of what they're doing to cooperate with plastic cups. And the idea is that if they can come up with an alternative to plastic cups, to lids and straws they've already been working on separately, then they could go a long way toward reducing the plastic waste that has been made very clear over the last few years by environmental activists, you know, swirls in the ocean, sitting on top of the ocean surface, sometimes in these, they call them gyres, in these giant swirling masses that can be hundreds of miles across. And really pose, I think, an environmental concern that has risen almost to the very top of environmental problems, or at least concerns, right up there with global warming in the eyes of some people. So they are joining and probably, let's say, headlining a list of brands that are finally trying to do something themselves about this, addressing this problem.
And so what does the nitty-gritty of that work look like? Will there be scientists from both companies and independent scientists joining them? And what will they be looking for exactly?
Well, actually, what they're doing is they're setting up a competition. I mean, it's so much of what big brands are doing these days is outsourcing innovation, right, and outsourcing R&D to smaller companies and entrepreneurs that they figure with the right incentive will come to them with ideas for how to solve challenges. And that's exactly what McDonald's and Starbucks are doing. They're getting together. Actually, McDonald's is joining something that Starbucks already established called the Next Gen Cup Challenge. And basically, what they're going to do is offer $1 million to entrepreneurs who can come up with solutions that will hopefully present some kind of integrated solution to the cup, lid, straw problem. And, they're counting on that kind of incentive to bring people out of the woodwork with their ideas, and they will then work with Starbucks and McDonald's R&D people to come up with what they hope will be the ultimate solution within a couple of years.
I hate to use the phrase because I know it's overused a lot, but Holy Grail. If they're able to come up with something, it could be the Holy Grail, though, in terms of the space and saving that plastic from going into the oceans and elsewhere. Talk to us a little bit about the finances of this, the economy of it.
Well, there's increasingly the people who are concerned about this problem of ocean waste are saying what we need to have globally is a closed loop economy where, there's incentives for people and brands to recycle, to not just throw things away. And right there, you cut off this ocean waste problem by itself. Straws are a relatively easy challenge in that regard because you can replace plastic with paper. You know, there are people who come up with permanent straws, collapsible aluminum things you put in your purse. I mean, it seems like a relatively easy solution. The whole cup lid challenge is a little bit more daunting because what material is it going to be made of? How is it going to be integrated engineering wise? But increasingly, you're finding this in the closed loop economy idea. You're finding other companies that are startups that are figuring out how to make money. I mean, there's a company in North Carolina called OceanWorks that is certifying ocean waste and is going to companies and brands and saying, you can advertise, you can market this product as made from certified ocean waste if you could come up with a product, and we can help you with that. And there's a startup in Florida called 4Ocean. A couple of university guys said, hey, we're going to pay fishermen in Bali and Haiti to pull plastic from the ocean. We're going to make bracelets out of it. We're going to charge $20 for them, and we're going to make money that way. So, you know, entrepreneurs and big brands are working on all various aspects of this to turn it into something economically viable as well as, you know, good thing for the planet.
You're a sort of a brand expert on this. You've been writing about brands for a long time. Do you recall a time when big brands like this work to solve problems like this?
Maybe not so openly. I mean, certainly, you know, you had big brands join all sorts of causes over the Farm Aid, right? I mean, there have been AIDS charities that brands have banded together to join. But in terms of an R&D project with a high profile like this, I mean, I think this is pretty rare, and I think that's why it's so significant. And, of course, McDonald's and Starbucks recognize the significance of it, and that they said that's why they are coming together in such an unusual situation, highlighting the way they regard this problem. And it does make a lot of sense. I mean, for something that's ultimately a commodity, you know, the cup and the straw, why not pool your resources and not have, you know, the right hand not know what the left is doing? It's not necessarily a competitive advantage for either one, and they want to be able to spread the technology too once they come up with it. I mean, they seem to be making a genuine approach to taking a big bite out of this problem.
So eventually, whatever they come up with, then what you're saying is we'll see that cup generally. Whenever we go order a cup of anything, it'll be that cup.
I mean, it would seem to be, you know, likely that they could set an industry standard, obviously. Nobody bigger in this space than Starbucks or McDonald's.
What is the time on this, Dale? I know Starbucks says it wants to have straws gone by 2020. McDonald's is working on this, but what's the timeline for this initiative?
They're kind of indeterminate about that. I know they want to get the initiative going right away. I assume it could be, you know, as quickly as within a couple of years. If there's a technology out there that's latent and just sitting out there and waiting for funding, I mean, I think they could move pretty quickly on that, especially if they find suppliers or work with their own suppliers and say, hey, we want this done quickly. So, you know, I would suspect within a couple of years we could all be sipping from something different at Starbucks or McDonald's.
Yeah, I think I saw something recently that kind of reminded me of when I was a kid. Me and my brothers had sippy cups, those little...
there you go.
Yeah, that's kind of what it looked like, though. Is that where we're headed?
That could be. If you can remove the stigma of the sippy cup and make it cool and, you know, maybe brush nickel or something, and something that adults would want to carry around or collapse and put in their purse and their attaché, that could work. Maybe you should apply for this grant. It's $1 million.
No, I just remember the sippy cup. When you knocked it over, it didn't spill anywhere. I think that would also be kind of handy to have, too.
Yeah, handy for me, for sure.
All right, Dale, good information. We appreciate you being with us this morning, as always, here in the Opening Bell.
All right. Thanks, Steve. Bye.
Dale Buss with us. You can read his story at brandchannel.com, and we'll link out to it as well in the podcast of our program a little bit later this morning at WGNradio.com.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, watching markets heading to the Opening Bell this morning with some weakness. The Dow futures are off about 20 points. NASDAQ futures are down about 32 points. That's almost a half a percent. S&P futures are down just a fraction. Gold and silver also trading lower this morning. Now with commodities in agriculture, good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Well, cattle traders will have a couple of reports to trade on today after the release on Friday of the monthly cattle on feed report, but also the semi-annual cattle inventory report. That survey coming every 6 months showed maybe slower cattle herd growth. And as far as the cattle on feed report, numbers pretty much in line with what the trade was expecting. We ended the week in the grain market with some strength. Wheat futures hitting their highest prices in more than a month on Friday, and corn and soybean futures also up for the fifth straight day. Well, NAFTA is not dead, at least in the eyes of the new president-elect of Mexico. President Obrador sent President Donald Trump a letter calling for a swift conclusion to NAFTA negotiations and pledging his wish to reset relations between the two countries. Last week, President Trump said he wouldn't mind having a separate trade agreement with Mexico and then go to work on the trade agreement with Canada. So we'll continue to watch developments there. Meetings coming up. Well, this week, the Allendale folks at McHenry, Illinois, holding their Ag Leaders Conference on July 24 through 26. Talking weather on the 24th, grains and oil seeds on the 25th, livestock markets on the 26th. You can call them at Allendale in McHenry, Illinois. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. Just a couple more stories before we leave you this morning. Tesla has asked some of its suppliers to refund a portion of what the automaker has already spent to help it become profitable, according to the Wall Street Journal. The plea raises questions about the company's cash position, which has dwindled following some production issues. A memo provided to the Wall Street Journal shows Tesla requested the supplier return what it calls a meaningful amount of money on its payments since 2016. The memo said all suppliers were being asked to help make the company profitable. On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for this Monday, July 23rd, the National Association of Realtors releases its existing home sales data for June today. We also get earnings from Alphabet and Google, among others. Hasbro is also out there with earnings. For the rest of the week, a big day for earnings tomorrow. 3M, AT&T, Harley-Davidson, JetBlue, Kimberly-Clark, Lockheed Martin, Texas Instruments, Verizon. On Wednesday, we get Chicago-based Boeing. Facebook will come in, General Motors. On Thursday, American Airlines, Comcast, McDonald's will be in there as well, Starbucks and the New York Times. And then on Friday, ExxonMobil, Merck, and Twitter among those reporting earnings. So lots of things that could move the markets this week, and especially today, July the 23rd, Monday.